evening, everyone, and welcome to The Inner Athlete. I'm your host, James Jankowitz, and we got a great show for you again this evening. All sorts of new information on how to become more fit, how to become more healthy. Going to look a little bit into how exercise can control your stress, something I think we all know, but we're going to go into the nuts and bolts of it, and that and a bunch of other topics coming up. So stick with us. You can visit us at InnerAthleteTraining.com, InnerAthleteTraining.com. And if you have any questions, inquiries, queries, feel free just to reach us through that website. And we have gotten a number of comments and questions, and we address them as they come up. So we'll be doing a little bit of that tonight as well. So InnerAthleteTraining.com, stick with us, and we'll be right back right after this.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year. So many a man sold a faith. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain. Made damn sure the pilot washed his hands. Feel his face. Pleased to meet you. Hope you get my name. But what's puzzling you is the nature of my game. Stuck around St. Petersburg when I saw it was a time for a change. Killed the Tsar and his ministers, Anastasia screamed in vain. I rode a tank, held a generous rank, when the blitz free rage and the bodies sank. Pleased to meet you, hope you guess my name. Oh yeah, I was puzzling you with the
everyone, and welcome back to The Inner Athlete. And just want to address something that came up. We got a couple questions about this through email, and it has to do with the fact the questions were addressed specifically toward the marathon. The New York City Marathon came and went a week ago, maybe even 2 weeks ago already, and some people were inquiring about carbo loading. What does that mean? What is that all about? Because it's something you normally see in endurance events like marathoning, ultramarathoning, and that kind of thing. And people had questions, well, what if I'm just a weight trainer and I'm just trying to put on muscle? Do I have to be concerned about carbo loading? So I wanted to just sort of spend a little bit of time and go into that in a little more detail, because I think it's an important thing to understand. When you talk about carbo loading, essentially you're looking at the main source of energy during any given event, any given athletic event, right? So if you're doing a marathon, your energy needs are going to be a little bit different than if you're playing a game of soccer, and those energy needs are going to be a little bit different than if you were weight training. So everything has its place. When you're doing an endurance event, the main fuel you're using there is glycogen, which is basically your sugar. Now remember, just to step back for 1 minute, you essentially get your body's energy through your macronutrients, meaning your bigger nutrients, and those are your fat, your protein, and your carbohydrate. Your micronutrients, conversely, are your vitamins and your minerals, but they're not energy yielding. So fat, protein, and carbohydrate all yield energy. And the way that breaks down is protein and carbohydrate, for every 1 gram, yields about 4 calories. So 1 gram of carbohydrate and 1 gram of protein yield 4 calories. 1 gram of fat, on the other hand, yields 9 calories, so more than double. And 1 gram of alcohol yields up to 7 calories. Now, alcohol's the worst because you're getting the calories, but you're not getting the nutrients. So when you eat a wholesome meal, like, and we'll go into this in terms of carb loading momentarily, but when you eat a wholesome meal, you're getting all the calories, but you're getting a lot of nourishment with those calories. When you just take alcohol, what you're essentially doing is you're getting 7 calories per gram, but you're getting no nutrient value to it. So you're just adding the calories, which will add weight, but you're not getting any vitamin C, vitamin B, any kind of mineral content in the alcohol at all. So what this essentially means is when you're looking at your energy systems, and we've done entire shows on this before, the energy systems, what you're talking about when you do a marathon is you're talking about glycogen, meaning sugar or carbohydrate, is your main source of energy. And you've probably heard the term complex carbohydrates, simple carbohydrates, complex carbohydrates. And what that essentially means is they're looking at the chemical compound of these foods. So a complex carbohydrate is just going to be that. It's going to be a very complex matrix. For anybody who's ever done organic chemistry, it looks like a very complicated architecture that the body then has to break down. And because it's more complicated, because it's more involved, because it's more dense, the body takes a longer time to break it down. Now, on the other hand, the simple carbohydrates or simple sugars, a monosaccharide, for instance, is very simple in its structure, and the body takes it in, and the body breaks it down very quickly. And I've used this example before, but I can't really use it enough. When you think about glycogen in the body and how it releases itself, think of a big fire, like a big campfire. And when you light a fire, you put kindling wood underneath, small branches, pieces of paper, that kind of thing, and then you put the bigger logs on top of it. And when this is built correctly, the kindling wood goes on, lights up very quickly underneath, and the bigger logs burn very slowly, so you get a nice big release of energy in the beginning, and then the logs finally catch, and they burn rather slowly. Well, the same could be said for our bodies in terms of carbohydrate. Carbohydrate is essentially the quick-burning kindling. Even if it's a complex carbohydrate, which takes a little bit more and a little bit longer to digest, it's still a quick-burning fuel compared to fat, compared to protein, and compared to fiber. And fiber doesn't really yield calories, doesn't really digest per se, and that's the whole benefit of fiber. It just goes through your body and pulls the crap out with it. But fat and protein, think of those as the big log. They're just sitting on top of that. So when you taking carbohydrates, whether they're complex or simple, those burn up very quickly. So you could essentially, take in a pound of pasta or some other whole grain. And what that will do is that will give you quick energy, and it will be burned rather quickly. Now, what carbohydrate doesn't have in it is any kind of satiety value. So by its chemical structure, it was never designed to provide satiety. It was never made to make you feel full. It was simply just made to be a quick energy source. All right, so now, to that end, when we look at those components, now we're looking at carbohydrate, we're looking at fat, we're looking at protein. When you run a marathon or do a triathlon, essentially what you want to do is train your body to store greater amounts of glycogen. Now, when you're into a marathon, your glycogen is eventually going to start running out. And then eventually what's going to happen is when the glycogen starts petering out, you're going to start using other sources in your body, namely fat. So the fat, which is essentially stored energy, is just going to stay in your body until you deplete your glycogen stores. And then when you get to that point, the body now takes stored fat and uses that for energy, which is your ideal position, ideal situation for weight loss. And that's why when you do cardiovascular, you do it for a prolonged period of time. Or you work at a higher intensity, one or the other. But that's not, you know, here nor there for this discussion, because right now what we're trying to address is, you know, the long-distance marathoners. So when you carb-load, what you're doing is you're training your body to withstand and contain and hold larger volumes of glycogen for a greater period of time. And how is that done? It's done like any other kind of training is. Because all you really have to do is you have to start training your body where you take in carbohydrate and then you expend it during your long run the next day. And you keep repeating that pattern over and over, and that's basically your foundation for this whole thing. Because if you just go to bed at night and the next morning you're going to wake up and do a long run and you really haven't had a high carbohydrate meal, then you're pretty much going to run on empty, and you're going to get to burning fat more quickly, which to some of us that's a benefit. But when you're doing a marathon, like you see these guys do, and it was a really great day that day for the New York Marathon. It was just a really beautiful day, and it was no records were broken that day, but it was still it's still always fun to watch. But you see these people out there, the winners are coming in at just a little over 2 hours. You know, the rest of the people are coming in at approximately between 4 and 5 hours. Your intermediate guys are coming in, you know, somewhere around 3, 3.5. So everybody's out there, even the winners are out there for a respectable amount of time. Now, the problem is a lot of us think that the actual sugar you're using, that's stored both in the liver and in the muscle. So when you do carb-loading, essentially you're training your body to store more of it, both in the liver and in the muscle. And a lot of people think that the muscle glycogen, the sugar that's in the muscle, they think that depletion occurs only during prolonged endurance exercises like marathon running. But that's not always true, because glycogen depletion may also be a gradual process. And that may occur over repeated heavy days of training where muscle glycogen is used faster than it is replaced. So it can work on that end as well. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to quote here from a lecture from a woman named Ellen Coleman, RD. This is from a great book called Realities in Nutrition. And it goes on to explain this in a little more detail. It says, training glycogen depletion, because that's what you're doing. You're training your body to deplete it in concordance to a certain period of time, can be prevented by a carbohydrate-rich diet and periodic rest days to give the muscles time to rebuild their stores. By eating a carbohydrate-rich diet, you can maintain adequate muscle glycogen stores and exercise harder and longer with less fatigue. Carbohydrate is essential for glycogen synthesis, and it should provide at least 60% of your total calories. And that's if you go by the standard, the RD diet, which is, if you've ever seen the pyramid, the nutrition pyramid, that calls for 60% of your carbohydrates, of your diet being carbohydrates. But again, I emphasize, those should be complex carbohydrates, high-quality, multigrain carbohydrates. But in our case, a typical American diet, which is about 46% carbohydrate, doesn't supply enough carbohydrate to replace glycogen you lose during heavy training. And on such a diet, a training athlete is susceptible to fatigue when muscle glycogen stores are depleted. On the other hand, a high carbohydrate diet, if now we're talking about 70% of your calories, of your daily calories, can restore muscle glycogen to normal levels in 24 hours, restoring endurance even during repeated days of high-intensity exercise. A diet containing 70% carbohydrate is recommended when you're exercising hard, 70% of your VO2 max or more, for several hours a day. However, if you're exercising for an hour or less, a diet of 60% carbohydrate is sufficient to replenish your glycogen stores. During endurance exercise, which exceeds 90 minutes, such as running, your muscle glycogen stores become progressively lower. When they drop to critically low levels, the point of glycogen depletion, you are exhausted and must either stop exercising or drastically reduce your pace. Marathon runners frequently refer to muscle glycogen depletion as hitting the wall, hitting the proverbial wall. That point in the marathon, usually around the 20-mile mark where it's common and running becomes virtually impossible. Never totally bought that whole idea of the wall, personally. I've done 6 marathons and, whatever. So another discussion. So back to glycogen stores. One obvious way to improve your endurance, then, if you're exercising longer than for an hour and a half, is to increase your muscle glycogen stores, which is what we were just talking about earlier. The higher your pre-exercise muscle glycogen level, the greater your endurance potential. This is the rationale behind carbohydrate loading. When done properly, carbohydrate loading can double your muscle glycogen stores. And if we look at what that means, if you eat a normal American diet, which is roughly 46 to 50% carbohydrate, you can exercise hard at 75% of your aerobic capacity for 1 to 1.5 to 2 hours before your muscle glycogen starts depleting. And when you go the carbohydrate loading regimen, where now you're up to 70% carbohydrate with taper training, you can exercise at the same intensity for 3 hours and possibly longer. And that means that carbohydrate loading can buy you an additional hour or more of high-intensity exercise. However, carbohydrate loading is only effective when you follow a specific week-long diet and exercise plan. So literally, you got to backtrack this. You take it to the 6th day before your competition. You know, you exercise hard, you're 70 to 75% of your VO2 max, which means you're training at a relatively high intensity for 90 minutes. On that day, in the next 2 days, you eat a normal American diet about 50% carbohydrate. But for the second and third days, decrease your training to 40 minutes, still at the same intensity, so you're just increasing your time, but not your intensity. On the next 2 days, you eat a high carbohydrate diet, which we're defining as about 70% carbohydrate of your diet, and reduce your training to 20 minutes. Finally, you rest the day before competition while maintaining the high carbohydrate diet. So I think you're starting to see the picture there. It's all in the timing and not the tricking of your muscles, but the conditioning of your muscles to hang on to the glycogen stores for a longer period of time. Now, the exercises to deplete your glycogen stores must be the same as your own competitive event, because glycogen stores are specific to muscle groups used. For example, if you're a cyclist, you need to deplete your stores by cycling rather than by running. And if you're a runner, you need to do them by running. So you really just need to train your event. And because essentially, look at it this way. You're training your body. We all know the importance of training your body. But here you're training at the same time your nutrition. So you're training your body to store and release accordingly the amount of carbohydrate. And how do you do that? You time that to the pace at which you're training. Now, exercise is the primary stimulus for increased muscle glycogen synthesis and accomplishes the necessary lowering, leading to the glycogen buildup when the muscles have a chance. Now, tapering your training and eating a high carbohydrate diet gives them this opportunity. All right, so you just lower your training and you ramp up your carbohydrate. And this helps the muscle increase its glycogen stores up to 2 times. Since exercise is the primary stimulus for high muscle glycogen stores, you need to be endurance trained or carbohydrate loading won't work. If you're unfit and try to carbohydrate load, your muscles won't store more than their usual amounts of glycogen. Even without carbohydrate loading, rested elite marathoners have muscle glycogen levels twice as high as normal, equal to the levels found in the carbohydrate loaded muscle of an average athlete. Elite endurance athletes probably won't benefit from the carbohydrate loading technique. So that's the long and the short of it. All right. Again, it's really just understanding how to pace it all with your training. And that's what's interesting about marathon training too, is that everything has to be done so almost religiously. You know, your conditioning just has to be right on track. Anybody who's done this, and I've done six of them, you know, it starts cutting into your social life. It starts cutting into your work life a little bit, and you really have to make the time. You have to accommodate the time to do this, because the reality is, even if you don't carb load, even if you don't train, when you go out there that day, chances are, even if you're even relatively conditioned, you'll finish. And you'll finish the race. It's just a matter of will, and it's just a matter of timing. But whether it's a quality race is what really makes a difference. I mean, you could just go out there and run the race, and you probably won't even run the whole time. You'll wind up walking, but you'll finish. But you'll feel miserable. And you'll feel miserable when you're done, and you'll feel miserable the day after, and probably a couple days after. So the whole point of training for a marathon is to not only taper your carbohydrate, but you need to sort of taper all your other activities as well. So in other words, if you're very diligent and you say, okay, Saturday morning is going to be my long run, and I'm going to get up every Saturday morning and do my long run. It could be Sunday. I don't care what day it is. But the point is, you go to bed that night, you have your high carbohydrate meal, you have your water, you have everything that you're going to need to do. You get up at a certain time, and you do your training, and then you come back, stretch, wash up, call it a day. The consistency is what's really, really important, because when you wake up for marathon day, marathon morning, you want to have had so conditioned your body that you know as soon as you get up, you know what time you're going to urinate, you know what time you're going to defecate, you know what time you have to eat relative to the start of the race, because you've spent 6 months doing all this. Follow what I'm saying? So when you wake up marathon morning, there's no big surprise. You know, you've trained this. And you've already ran, you know, 18 to 20 miles. So when that morning comes, you get up, you're regular, everything just goes as it has when you've trained, you get to the starting line, and then it just becomes another run. Yeah, it becomes like another long run that you're doing. And that's where the true joy really comes in for these endurance events. If you've been negligent in your training, you're going to have a really, really bad experience. You know, even if you are well-conditioned. You might have an anomaly out there, somebody who doesn't train at all who might be able to finish it and be fine, but believe me, they are one in a million. So again, everything comes down to training, and everything comes down to training properly. So when you talk about carbo loading, it's not just a one-off, it's something you have to condition your body to. Just like you have to condition your body when you run to feel the stress of the run, and then you give it recovery. And remember, and I know we've talked about this before in the past too, but it's just a really important point to emphasize, recovery is at least 50% of your total equation, if not more. So if you're not giving yourself enough time to recover from your workouts, you're not really benefiting here. All right, so you have to train very hard, very diligently. You have to be consistent, especially when it comes to an endurance event. And right down to your sneakers. You know, you can't go changing your sneakers a week before the marathon. You can't go changing your shorts. You know, you should know exactly what shirt you're going to wear, what shorts you're going to wear, what socks you're going to have on, the kind of sneakers you're going to be wearing. You know, you want your whole body to have experienced all this many times before, so there's no surprises that morning. Then you just get up, do your thing, and you run your race, and you have a great time doing it. Like I said, otherwise it's going to be a hell of a bad experience for you. All right, so that's the skinny on carbohydrate loading. It's important. If you want more information on it, there's many sources out there. I mean, I painted a very general picture. There are very specific ways you can get into it, because when I say, you know, carbohydrates have to be 50% of your diet when you're training at 20% of your intensity, then you sort of have to figure out, okay, what is 50% of my calories? You know, you just have to figure out, okay, I'm taking 1,200 calories or 1,500 calories. You know, the equations are several, but when you have them all down, when you have them all locked down, you pretty much come have the information you need to do this stuff right. So you have to figure that out. You have to figure out, you know, what does 50% of carbohydrate mean to you? How many calories in carbohydrates is that? How many grams of sugar is that? Et cetera, et cetera. And that's a little bit beyond the scope of this program because it's such a highly individualized thing. What I really want to do is just sort of like go over the broad idea of carbo loading for those of you who were just had some interest in it and weren't quite understanding what it is. And essentially, once more, it's just the way you train your body so your body can withhold greater amounts of glycogen, because muscle glycogen is your primary source of energy when you're doing an endurance event. All right, it's not your primary source of energy when you're doing weight training. You know, it's not your primary source of energy when you're playing soccer. You know, and again, we've gone through this on previous shows in terms of energy systems and what are your most you know, what are your energy systems and when do you use them? And I believe that show and other shows like it are posted on the website, innerathletetraining.com. And we have most of the shows up there now, but we'll be posting other ones shortly. So we'll have the whole collection up there so you can reference back to them and, you know, and start putting the pieces together yourself. Because like I said, it's a highly individual thing. I can't sit here on the radio and just tell you all, you know, each one of you needs 1,500 calories and 40% of that is carbohydrate. No. Everybody responds differently, and I can only speak in very general principles here. All right. So my goodness, I can't believe that took a half an hour. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to a quick break, and then we'll be right back with more information on exercise and fitness, and we're going to delve in a little bit about exercise and stress because that's a big one. Don't forget to visit us at innerathletetraining.com, innerathletetraining.com, and we'll be right back right after this. And welcome back to The Inner Athlete. I'm your host, James Jankowicz. And again, don't forget to visit us at innerathletetraining.com, innerathletetraining.com. Okay, I wanted to bring this other study up. It just came out, was it this week? Yeah, it was this week. And I definitely wanted to mention this before I moved on with the other things. Joyful music in tune with heart disease. This popped up all over the place. And for those of you who didn't hear it, definitely worth mentioning. Throw on a little Bach, Beatles, or Beyonce, and then sit back and relax in the knowledge that your blood vessels are expanding wide open, letting the blood flow freely. Nothing could be healthier for your heart, a new study suggests. Quote, listening to music that makes you feel good may also be a good preventative measure for your heart health, unquote, said study author Dr. Michael Miller, director of the Center for Preventive Cardiology at the University of Maryland Center in Baltimore. He said, quote, there's no downside. It's simple, economic, and it may pay off dividends in regards to a healthy heart, unquote. Added Dr. Carl LeVay, a medical director of cardiac rehabilitation and prevention, director of the Stress Testing Laboratory at the Ochsner Heart and Vascular Institute in New Orleans, said, quote, although this was just an acute, meaning a short-term study, it suggests that laughter and listening to relaxing music may provide cardioprotection or be heart healthy. I suspect that the authors are correct in this theory, but the important thing to know is whether regular performance of this or similar activity would have long-term benefits on the cardiovascular system, similar to, superior, or additive to such things as regular aerobic exercise that has been extensively studied and proven to have substantial long-term benefits, unquote. Now, let's just put those two things together, right? I mean, when you're out there doing long-term aerobic exercise, we know conclusively there's benefits to your heart from doing that. Now, imagine being out there with your iPod and listening to the music you really enjoy. You're talking a double whammy. You're talking about two things that are extremely economic, cost no money, that could profoundly benefit your heart. And Miller, who presented the findings Tuesday at the American Heart Association's annual scientific sessions in New Orleans, said many people look at heart health in terms of negative risk factors that need to be overcome. There are a lot of positive risk factors, he noted. Previous studies had found that music could affect heart rate and blood pressure. Prayer has also been shown to improve cardiac performance, and Miller's group previously found that laughter improved cardiovascular health. So, well, let's put the holy trinity there. Let's say you're exercising, laughing, and listening to your music. Bang! And that's just your heart. I mean, there's no telling what that does to your immune system as well. For the new study, 10 healthy non-smoking volunteers, 70% of the men with a mean age of 36, selected music that made them feel good and other music that made them feel anxious. Selections differed according to the person. Participants also were asked to look at humorous video clips and relaxation audio tapes. The researchers measured brachial artery flow in the forearm using a blood pressure cuff before and after each stimulus. And a minute after you release the rubber bulb, you see how the inner lining of the blood vessels react, the endothelial response, Miller said. People with risk factors for heart disease like smoking and hypertension don't dilate normally. We believe that means that their vasculature is not healthy. Among the study participants, brachial artery flow increased 26% during the joyful music phase and decreased 6% after listening to anxiety-producing music. Now, of course, that's going to be extremely subjective. You know what? I can tell you from experience, what's given me joy is totally made other people walk out of the room. So I think when they define it as anxiety producing, I think that's a clearly subjective thing. I think it all depends on what's really rocking your boat. Blood flow also increased 19% during the laughter, the video clip they showed, phase, and 11% during relaxation. The increase in dilation seen after listening to joyful music was about the same level we see after someone does aerobic activity. It's also similar to what we see after taking statin medication, Miller said. The effects last for about an hour. The positive effect may come from the release of endorphins, Miller speculated, referring to the body's chemical that blocks pain and ease anxiety and depression. He said, quote, clearly the role of psychological risk factors, and particularly psychological stress, has been neglected in preventative cardiology, LeVay said. Clearly, extreme emotional stress, the classic example is public speaking, especially for novice speakers, has the exact opposite effect as what Miller showed with laughter and relaxing music. Acute and chronic job stress also has deleterious effects which could be countered by laughter or relaxing music. There you have it. What more do I need to say? That's from medicinenet.com. And that, like I said, that study popped up all over the place, so I really felt that warranted a mention. So again, if you're laughing and you're doing aerobic exercise and you're listening to your favorite music, then you're on the right track. Now, to sort of segue into that, we're going to continue on that same vein and discuss exercise and its role in helping control stress. I mean, stress is something that we're all sort of feeling right now, especially with the economic environmental factors. But again, and I reiterate, and this is a large portion of what the show is all about, is these things are always going to be there. There's always going to be some sort of external factor. If it wasn't the economic thing, it would be something else. I mean, we're born into this world. There'll never not be conflict. So it really, at the end of the day, comes down to your ability just to deal with it. And obviously, as this last study showed, the more you can sing it off, laugh it off, and relax it off, you know, the better off you're going to be. So, but this might help you too, because this comes from the American Council on Exercise, and this is pretty much their position statement on exercise and helping to control stress. And it says people who exercise regularly will tell you they feel better. Some will say it's because chemicals called neurotransmitters produced in the brain are stimulated during exercise. Since it's believed that neurotransmitters mediate our moods and emotions, they can make us feel better and less stressed. So if you have, for example, the neurotransmitters, which mediate your moods and emotions, and then you have the endorphins, which help ease pain and depression, and all these chemicals rise as a result of doing exercise, then you know, you're talking about creating like a pharmacopoeia in your own body that's self-produced that no drug in the world could possibly duplicate. So, but that's my little aside. I'll go on to continue on with the article. It says, four ways exercise controls stress. Number one, it can help you feel less anxious. Exercise is being prescribed in clinical settings to help treat nervous tension. Following a session of exercise, clinicians have measured a decrease in electrical activity of tensed muscles. People have been less jittery and hyperactive after an exercise session. Number two, it can relax you. One exercise session generates 90 to 120 minutes of relaxation response. Some people call this post-exercise euphoria or endorphin response. We now know that many neurotransmitters, not just endorphins, are involved. The important thing, though, is not what they're called, but what they do. They improve your mood and leave you relaxed. All right. And again, these things, like I said before, they're dormant in the body. You know, your body, they exist. You know, your internal pharmacology exists to help you ease pain, to help you feel better about yourself. And exercise, man, if there's any one key that really opens the door to all that, it's training, it's exercise. Exercise can make you feel better about yourself. Think about those times when you've been physically active. Haven't you felt better about yourself? That feeling of self-worth contributes to stress relief. And that's true, too, and I'll expand on that just a little bit, too. It's just you always feel better after you exercise, and this is an axiom. You know, we've mentioned this before, that even if you loathe exercise, even if you don't enjoy the process of it, nobody ever regrets having done it. You don't walk away from training for an hour and say, dang, I wish I didn't do that. You know, it just doesn't work that way. Normally, you feel good no matter which way you cut it. So, and you've also known you've done something really good for yourself. So you do. By and large, it just helps you feel better about yourself. And this is an interesting one, too. Exercise can make you eat better. People who exercise regularly tend to eat more nutritious foods, and it's no secret that good nutrition helps your body manage stress better. Now, that doesn't go for everybody. I know many people who exercise a lot and eat like crap. But I think what they're addressing here is this main idea that if you're giving yourself the time to exercise, and if you're making that accommodation in your life, as difficult and as challenging as it may be, well, then you're going to think twice before you put crap in your body again. You're going to think twice before you have that ice cream. You're going to think twice before you have those cookies, because, quite frankly, the logical part of you is just going to be saying, well, what am I doing that for? You know, if I'm putting in all the time to train and to do the right thing for myself, then sitting here eating this ice cream or eating these cookies or eating this soda or eating these potato chips isn't really going to, you know, isn't really helping my cause any. So I think that just follows suit. And now it's time to get started. Now that you know exercise can make a big difference in controlling stress, you got to make time for regular physical activity. And, you know, you have many options. Aerobic activity is one. You know, it takes 20 minutes worth, 6 to 7 days a week, 20 minutes. That won't carve a big chunk out of your day, and all it takes is 20 minutes to improve your ability to control stress significantly. Yoga, so you have yoga, and in that same family I would even put Pilates. Your mind relaxes progressively as your body increases its amount of muscular work. Recent studies have shown that when large muscle groups repeatedly contract and relax, the brain receives a signal to release specific neurotransmitters, which in turn make you feel relaxed and more alert. Now, the interesting thing about yoga and Pilates, just as another aside, is that you're doing them quite the opposite if you were weight training. A lot of times, you see guys get in the weight room and you start pumping iron and you start screaming and yelling. You do your primal screams and you just get really into it. You're cranking your high-intensity music. And that helps burn off a lot of stress, there's no doubt. But when you're doing yoga and Pilates and things of that nature, it's interesting because you're still stimulating the muscle. You're still putting it through stress. The muscle's still getting a really good workout. But you're doing it in a much more relaxed way. You know, you're not overstimulating your brain with mind chatter. You know, you're not in there telling yourself, I'm going to do this, and yeah, let's do it, you know, one more rep. You know, you're not going down that whole road. When you're doing the yoga and you're doing the Pilates, it's a much more meditative, much more Zen approach to exercise, but the benefits are very similar, if not better, because you're not just lifting weight. You know, you're using your entire body. All your muscles are being stimulated simultaneously, and you tend to elongate them a lot more. So they tend to have a lot more flexibility to them rather than just picking up heavy weight and lifting. And don't get me wrong, I'm not anti-weight training at all. I mean, I still do it. Did it all my life. You know, but as a good contrast to that, yoga and Pilates, Tai Chi I throw in there as well, are just nice additions, because not every time you work out has to be a record breaker. So sometimes you can just make it a very relaxed, enjoyable experience. Think about it this way. Think about when you've really worked hard and you feel that incredible relaxation after you work out. Imagine when you do something like yoga or Pilates, you can have that feeling that you normally feel after you work out. You could feel that during your entire workout and still be getting results. That's what I think is kind of interesting about those approaches. And let's not forget recreational sports. You know, you can play tennis, racquetball, volleyball, squash. You know, any number of these things. Soccer, volleyball. The list goes on and on and on and on. Games require the kind of vigorous activity that rids your body of stress-causing adrenaline and other hormones, and especially when you have that competitive edge there, too. When you're competing with somebody and you're on a team, that will generally release the stress even a little bit more, because you're just a little more that more into it. You know, you're just getting that much more intense about what you're doing. And what's interesting too is the article says here, not just any exercise will do. It says, don't try exercising in your office. Outdoors or away from the office is the best place to find a stress-free environment. Even a corporate fitness center can have too many work-related thoughts for some people. Now, my rebuttal to that is, you take it where you can get it. And a little bit of something is better than a whole lot of nothing. So if all you can do is get it in your office, then that's what you do, plain and simple. All right. I wouldn't, you, because, oh boy, I can just see that now. It's like, well, the article said don't do it in your office. So, I'm in my office all day. What am I going to do? I'm telling you, exercise can be done anywhere, anytime. Stay away from overcrowded classes is another suggestion they have, which I don't know if I agree with. It says if you work surrounded by people, a big exercise class may be counterproductive. Solo exercise may be more relaxing for you. If, however, you work alone, you may enjoy the social benefit of exercising in a group. A lot depends on your personality and what causes stress for you. And that, again, my friends, is extremely subjective. You know, if you're getting all wigged out being in a big class, by all means, don't do it. I don't particularly like classes. I never really took them. I'm not a big fan. But I know a lot of people who swear by them. I know a lot of people who wouldn't train at all if it weren't for really good classes and really good instructors. And lastly, the final tip here says don't skip a chance to exercise. Take a break every 90 minutes and you'll be doing yourself a favor. 90-minute intervals are a natural work break period, and about 4 10-minute exercise breaks at this time will burn about as many calories as a solid 40-minute session. Work break exercises can be as simple as walking or climbing stairs, stretching, or doing calisthenics. Controlling stress comes down to making the time to exercise, and don't forget that you're worth it. So there are lots of little ways that you can integrate this stuff into your day. You know, it's if your day is really busy, you just set your watch to beep every hour. And if you're working your office, have it go off every hour, and on the hour, just do 10 push-ups. You do that over an 8-hour day, you've done 80 push-ups. Don't tell me that doesn't count. You know, if you were to sit down and do 80 push-ups in one shot, chances are very few people out there can actually do that. All right, so, and every hour your clock can go off and you could not only do push-ups, but do a set of squats. You know, do 10 squats, do 10 push-ups. You know, if your day goes longer to a 9-hour day, 10-hour day, then you're talking, 80, 90, 100 reps of one particular exercise. If you have a pull-up bar in your office, just go to that and start doing pull-ups. And if you do it in that way, in that fashion, the way this article says, in 90-minute intervals, you'll never get all that sweaty. You'll just raise your heartbeat for the time that you're doing it, and then you'll calm down and go back to work and do it in another hour or 90 minutes later anyway. So the point is you really have no excuse. As long as you can move, as long as you can breathe, you can exercise. So, if you're going to play those games with yourself and say, well, I'm too busy and I can't do it, it's just, that's all it is games. It's just nonsense. It's just bullcrapping yourself, because the point is you can squeeze into your day. And we've talked about this, simple things, just parking your car further away from where you're going to go. If you're in the city, getting off the subway or bus stop sooner, maybe a block or two sooner, and that makes you walk. Always take the stairs instead of the elevator. You add all this up at the end of the day, and it all counts for something. Now, if you do all that, and on the hour or every 90 minutes do a set of push-ups or squats, then you've done a hell of a lot of work for that day. You've done a respectable amount of work, and you've done it without having to change your clothes, without having to go down to the gym, without having to go through that whole process, because a lot of people just don't dig that. A lot of people just get really wigged out at the amount of time it takes. And I know if you're unfamiliar with the fitness center, a lot of people just get very intimidated about, what are these machines, and I don't know what I'm doing, and they look like 17th century stretch racks, and, it just discourages them. So I'm just, this article emphasizes, and I'm here to tell you that, exercise can be done anywhere, any place, any time. It's just a matter of your own commitment. Yeah, if you make the time and you change and you go train hard, that's great. You'll have great benefits and you'll feel better. But if you can get it in just in piecemeal throughout the day, that's fine too. Bottom line is it all counts. It all means something. Because remember, you have over 200 bones in your body. And you have well over 200 joints. So this body of yours was meant to move, and it's healthier when it does move. So that's that. Anyway, we are almost coming up to the end of the program again already. So just wanted to cover those things, and we covered all of them. So just, again, if you have any inquiries, don't hesitate to contact us. Oh, actually, maybe I'll save this for next time. There's one more thing I wanted to go over based on an article, but I don't think I'm going to have enough time to finish it up. But again, don't forget to visit us at innerathletetraining.com, innerathletetraining.com. And I have a whole new slew of guests that I'm going to have on starting the new year. And I believe the website will actually be revamped come the new year as well. All the shows will be updated. New articles will be posted. And it'll be great, you know, because together we'll go through this new year into 2009. Even with all the problems our country's facing, even with all our personal problems, whether you're employed, unemployed, or whatever you're going through, you know, the holy sanctimony of exercising and taking care of your health is a constant, because all these external things around us will pass. All these unfortunate situations will eventually abate. The one constant that we need to keep from cradle to grave is our health and our wellness. And that's a journey, and that takes a certain amount of discipline, and it takes a certain amount of commitment. And if you find yourself putting more time and commitment into other parts of your life, then I'm here just to help you balance that out a little bit and bring you back to the reality of the body. Because it truly does, is the only thing that will serve you from cradle to grave. Everything else will come and go, but your body is the one thing you got for the duration of this for this particular leg of the journey. So it's important that we take care of it. So with my guests coming up in the new year, and with all the different topics that I already have planned for the new year, you know, we'll, you know, together, you know, as a group, we'll get through this, and you know, we'll just make sure we continue to focus on what's most important here, which is our health and our well-being, because that is your rock, that's your foundation. When you got that, you really have everything. As cliche as it may sound, and I know it does, when you have your health, you got everything. But it's, you know, it's when you don't have it that cliche becomes a much more profound, real experience, and not just simply cliche. And so often we do take it for granted. I mean, I know people who feed their pets better than they feed themselves. Not that you shouldn't feed your pet well. Of course you should. But, you know, they'll go out of their way to take care of their pets than far more vigorously than they will their own body. So it really comes down to these priorities, because everybody knows when you're not feeling well, you don't really perform well. And then it's just a cascade from there. Just think about when you're sick. Think about when you're tired. You know, versus how you feel when you're just all refreshed. And just think that feeling of being refreshed and that feeling of being reinvigorated and renewed can be the normal. That can be the majority of the time, the majority of the feeling that you're feeling throughout the day, and not just a one-off every once in a while when you got the time to exercise. And that's what I wish for you guys. That's what I wish for everybody, because life just is a lot more easier when you have all those things intact. And also coming up for the new year, we'll be doing a lot more programming on the mind and a lot more programming on nutrition. So I already have a whole thing laid out. And like I said, a lot of great guests that I think you'll find very compelling to listen to. And we just took us a while to get the studio up to speed, but you know, we'll be able to do call-in interviews now instead of having people in studio, and we'll be able to, you know, do this all from that perspective. So we'll be bringing a lot more guests into the mix as well. All right. And lastly, too, we'll also be posting more context on the website, you know, more links that will, you know, give you more fruitful information and continue helping you in this journey. All right. So, again, please contact us at innerathletetraining.com if you have any queries, questions, and they are coming in. So we thank you for that. And just keep the information flowing. All right. So thanks for listening. I hope everybody well, all the best, and we'll see you next week on The Inner Athlete. In the meantime, keep on training.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but I know that you got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt you somehow. Don't you draw the queen of diamonds, for she'll beat you if she's able. You know the queen of hearts is always your best bet. Now it seems to me some fine things have been laid upon your table, but you only want the ones that you can't get. Desperado, oh, you ain't getting no younger. Your pain and your hunger, they're driving you home. And freedom, oh, freedom, well, that's just some people talking. Your prison is walking through this world all alone. Don't your feet get cold in the wintertime? The sky won't snow and the sun won't shine. It's hard to tell the nighttime from the day. Maybe raining.